There's so much advice on what to say to persons living with cancer. Don't
cancer
worry,
everything
will be
as
fine.
Hard as it used to be.
Look on the bright
if
side.
Can
remember
tomorrow, you can.
That there's
okay.
someone
you have loads of free time.
I know how.
Congratulations, you're done.
Yes, instead of thinking about what we should say, perhaps we should start listening. Welcome to the first episode of Celebrating Adversity, a podcast for people living with cancer. This is Julianne, and I'll be hosting a two-part series, an intimate conversation between Joseph and Clark, a phone call between Toronto and Manila with two college friends who were both diagnosed with stage 4 cancer. Joseph, who loves sports, was found to have stage 4 adenocarcinoma that fractured his spine when he fell one day walking. Clark, a rock climber and a career coach, was trying to have a second child. Tests showed stage 4 prostate cancer that spread. A year later, an unforeseen lump on his leg turned out to be stage 2 sarcoma. I was surprised about the way stage 4 cancer affected Joseph and Clark. There were no signs, no advanced warnings. Everything was so sudden.
Clark, how have you adjusted to living with cancer?
I was in denial that, you know, I had really cancer, and I was trying to do the same things that I was doing before I had cancer. You know, I tried to sneak in a couple of UN missions. You know, I continued to do a lot of the climbing that I used to do before. But I realized that I was getting more tired. And when I was on mission, the bleeding associated with the radiation was really unmanageable.
Joseph, can you tell us about the cancer you have?
All of a sudden, I had to sort of like slow down my life. When I fractured my back, I was bedridden. And that was hard for me because I've always been an active person. It was a big sudden change for me, not being active, being sedentary, lying down the whole day. I was not used to it. It was very depressing for me that I felt that my body had betrayed me. Being so active, I thought I was taking care of my body for so long, and then all of a sudden the cancer hit me in that way. Could not work, could not do anything for myself. That was the most depressing part, not being able to do the most basic things for yourself and being very heavily reliant on people. I fell into a bit of a depression. The first thing that always comes to mind is, why me, right? Why me? Why is this happening to me? My first reaction was, or thought was, okay, if this is going to happen, I don't want to go through treatment wherein I'll just suffer, make everybody miserable, and then just waste a lot of money and then eventually just die. I've heard a lot of stories about people being diagnosed with cancer, going through chemo, and then they seem to just get worse and then eventually they pass on. So I thought, okay, I'm not going to fight.
Clark had surgery, radiation, chemo, and now is going through hormone treatment. What I found unexpected was what Clark and Joseph did in parallel. They used the sports that they love to help them heal. Let's first listen to Clark tell us how rock climbing became part of his therapy.
Cancer did not affect my ability to exercise and to climb. And I felt that if there is one thing that I could continue doing and do well was to climb. The kind of cancer that I had an impact on your sense of masculinity, you know, because it's the prostate cancer. It attacks your ability to reproduce. It affects your sexual drive. So for me, climbing was all about trying to do things that other people living without cancer could not do. And when I checked with the doctor encouraged me actually to continue climbing as part of my own therapy. So I was climbing almost every week. I was climbing every rock. And you know, at a certain point, it started shifting. Instead of looking at climbing as a way to prove to others, it became part of my healing. It became part of my coping mechanism because every time I climbed, this is natural high that I get that helped me through the moments where I was depressed or that helped me through my different kinds of therapy.
And Joseph, how have you adjusted?
The good thing is, as the months progressed, I started to feel better. my back has started to feel better. I've been able to move and do things. It started off last this March, because my going through this immunotherapy means that my oncologist, my doctor, was able to focus more on trying to get my back better. What I'm undergoing right now is bone therapy. They give me a mixture of medicines that's supposed to promote bone growth and strengthen my bones, which so I do this monthly. So starting in March, I started walking again. I have to use a back brace, of course, but started off using a walker, then transitioned to using two walking canes. And now I actually, since the end of March, I've been walking on my own with no support. If I feel tired, I use the back brace. I can't move too much or sit too long without that back brace. So that's part of it. But I've also started doing weights again. I'm showing the muscles again. So very happy. Yeah. I'm able to walk. I'm able to do things again for myself. So I'm happy. I'm happy. People who don't really do sports don't understand. But they think, why do you do that? You're already tired and you still go out and exercise and get yourself more tired. But actually, your body misses it. That kind of exertion wherein you sweat it out. For me, it's like detoxifying. It gets out a lot of poison. If I'm not exercising, and then I'm doing things around the house, trying to fix things. I try to do my own do-it-yourself project. Yeah, I like doing that.
Family, friends, doctors, and trainers were an important part of their journey. Traditionally, caregivers are expected to hover around, telling them what to do and what not to do. In their story, I noticed that their caregivers managed a delicate balance of stepping back and stepping forward to support Joseph and Clark in navigating their own path.
Clark, what was the impact of cancer on the people who cared about you?
What I loved most about my yoga teachers, I had several, my personal trainers, my climbing buddies, my wife, was they accepted me the way I am. You know, they didn't judge me. You know, so when I climb, they treat me as any other climber. When I do yoga, they treat me as any other yoga practitioner. And for me, that respect and that love was very, very important. What I found so helpful is that respect and the way they push me to be a better climber, to be a better husband, to be a better father, to be a brother, to be a better son. Of course, there is tenderness in it. There is tenderness that comes with the knowledge that I'm hurting inside emotionally. I'm hurting inside mentally. And the physical pain that I'm going through, even though it's not readily evident, is very real. So I know that they are sensitive to it, and I catch them being sensitive to it. But they've never treated me less as a person because of my cancer.
Joseph, what about you? What was the impact of cancer on the people who cared about you?
Initially, when I first got sick and was hospitalized, the burden of taking care of me fell on my two children. My two young children are still in senior high school, and also on my sister-in-law, my wife's sister. My wife was working overseas, so she was not around to take care of me yet. And then also on my nephew and his girlfriend. So they were very young, all of them. Of course, it's very hard. They had to take turns looking after me in the hospital and doing everything for me. So it was a bit depressing for them, especially also for my nephew, because my brother's wife also passed because of cervical cancer a few years back. So it was very depressing for my nephew then. So they tried to be very cheerful whenever I was there. Whenever they were in the hospital room, they were playing games with me, trying to entice me to let's play cards and everything, although I couldn't move. Mm-hmm. They were trying to cheer me up because they could see that I was a bit depressed. I was not very talkative and everything. But when all of them were in the room, well, you know how young people are. They're very chatty and everything. So they drew me out bit by bit. I think it was a bit harder for my wife, because initially when she first heard that I was sick, she wanted to come home immediately. But I said, just wait first. I was hospitalized in the latter part of November, and she wanted to come home already. immediately, but I told her just to wait a bit. Let's hear the verdict out and see, or at least find out what the biopsy results will be before you come home. Because you're, if with me in the hospital, you're the only one working right now, and we're gonna need the income. But when the prognosis came out that was stage 4 cancer, then we decided that she had to really come home already. We couldn't rely on the kids being the one to take care of me, or my sister-in-law being the one to take care of me. She had a life of her own as well. So she had to come home and stop working. My family was very supportive. They could see from the start that I was a bit depressed, and they tried to cheer me up and talk to me as if it was everything was normal, that they would take care of me until I got better. And I believed them. So that's why I decided on myself that, okay, with all of their support, then yeah, let's take on the goal of trying to get better, trying to beat the cancer. My family rallied around me, and that I'm very grateful for that, and that they took that upon themselves to be able to cheer me up, goad me on, encourage me to fight. And that's what I'm doing. And like I said, first real goal was to mobilize again, to be able to walk and move again.
Joseph raises a very important point. For a lot of cancer survivors or people living with cancer, your first reaction is to fight for your independence and to say that I'm not a dependent person and that I'm still like anyone else. So that's the first, my first reaction. And then later it evolves and you begin to accept certain things and say to yourself, you know what? My father died bedridden. And when he was bedridden, I saw his nobility. You know, I saw his wisdom and I saw a part of him that I never saw when he was still strong. And I think what happens with people living with cancer is everything is compressed. Whereas for a lot of people, you have to wait until you go to get to an old age where you become sort of more dependent. Here, you're suddenly in a situation where you're vulnerable, where you're forced to rely on the people you care who care about you. And it's a humbling moment. But once you let go of this part of you that wants to be independent, you make space for other beautiful things in your life. So for me, letting go of my ego, letting go of that part of me that wanted to be invulnerable and strong, enabled me to find the space to be kind, to be generous, to love myself, to love others. So the people who we love who are growing old are like that. My father who died last year and my mother who's in her old age, you see the change in her and how she becomes more gentle and kind with other people. The blessing that I have with my cancer is the blessing that comes with letting go of your past life and giving space for that new you that is more compassionate, is more kinder, is more gentle, is more aware of the more important things in life and living.
Yes, we will hear more about life and living from Clark and Joseph in episode 2. We will also hear their thoughts about death, decline, COVID-19, and facing one's inner demons. Let's end this session with an original poem written by Clark.
Dark, a part of me, dying perhaps so, watching golden flow in the veins. Strong, a part of me, indefatigably fierce, a beast, my friends say. Treasuring cliches, embracing young and its shadow, sweet sweat hide my thoughts. Strong, a part of me, indefatigably fierce, a beast, my friends say.
I hope you enjoyed this episode. Share it with your friends. Support our GoFundMe campaign and tune in for part 2.